Moel Gazar. He is in our College of Vet Med. He's the poultry guy, the bird guy, as I'll refer to him, but only poultry. And one of the things that when we were putting together topics for this, and Jeff Workman, who's our handy-dandy organizer from the Vet College, and I sat down and I said, look, this bird flu thing, everybody is talking about it, you know, as a more of a consumer economics and food economics guy myself. Egg prices, if I get asked again, you know, I'm going to have to learn a lesson probably in bird flu, or I'll send them to Mo here. So we got him to do this. In 2015, this whole avian influenza thing has been in the news. And we hear about, quote, bird flu periodically over time. What we've got this year, I guess maybe to start with, what is this thing that we've got floating around on us here this year, and it's happened a little bit before, and where the heck did it come from? Did you bring it with you when you moved from that wherever?
Georgia.
Yeah,
no,
Georgia.
I hope not. Yeah. So flu viruses, including human flu viruses, they're the same kind of virus, but we have different variations of these viruses that can infect different species. So you hear all bird flu, swine flu, equine flu, even recently dog flu.
Right.
So the influenza virus is such a mobile target, and it keeps moving from one species to another. But typically when we have the bird flu, it infects birds. When we have the swine flu, it infects swine, and that's it. And in some rare occasions, they do jump species. So they move from swine to human or from bird to swine and so on.
And when they're talking about bird flu, it may not be the same bird flu. You call them strains. In the critter world, we talk about breeds.
Yep.
I mean, it's essentially this similar
very
comparison
similar.
There.
Absolutely.
So what we're experiencing this year, probably, I don't think it's the same strain or breed that the last time we had bird flu in the news.
Right. So we have many, many different kinds of bird flu. So we're now just talking about birds flu, not human flu.
Right.
And even within the bird flu, we have so many variations. And in a broad general classification, we have two kinds. One that makes the birds really, really sick, and that's what we call the high path avian influenza. And one that makes them slightly sick, it comes in, goes, no problem. And that's the low path. So low pathogenic, high pathogenic. In other words, the one that makes them really sick and the one that don't.
And the one we had this year
and the one
made
that
them
we
really
had,
sick.
The one that we had this year made them really sick. And the mortality, the birds that die from it, is up to 95%. So for each 100 birds that get sick, 95 will die.
Okay, where did this one come from? Do we know?
So, yeah, we do. And using a lot of techniques in molecular epidemiology and DNA and RNA, we know exactly where it comes from.
So you went CSI on them then, right?
We did. So that's what we do for a living.
I know. And you're the next TV star for whichever version of CSI they...
Hopefully for good news, not for bad news. So... the Far East, China in particular, and other countries in the Far East, right, seem to be the hotbed of generating all these new viruses every year. Every year, they produce ones that kills all the birds, the one that kills all the swine, and even the ones that infect humans. And this one is no exception. It's coming from the Far East. It started last year in January of 2014 in Korea. It jumped across to Japan, back to China, back to Korea, and stayed like this for most of the year. And closer to the end of the year, in October, November, it started to show up in the Western European countries. So okay. UK, Holland, Italy, and a couple more countries all of a sudden started to show up there. And we think the main culprit for that would be the migratory waterfowl. So the birds that migrate north to south all the time, every year, twice a year, in the spring and in the fall, we think they are the reason this virus has been able to move so quickly to the western part of the world. And then in late November, the first case was reported in North America, in British Columbia, Canada, on the west coast, and then it made its way down to the United States on the west coast. So we had Washington, Oregon, California break out with this outbreak within a few weeks. Mostly was backyard flocks and non-commercial birds and, right, and game birds and stuff like that. We had only a couple of cases of commercial poultry, broilers and layers in California. And then it went quiet for a few weeks, and then all of a sudden it showed in the Midwest. Now, to understand this movement, we have to understand the migratory waterfowl, the migratory pathways for the waterfowl. It's like the migration highways. And we have four of them in the United States. One on the Pacific, or you call it the Pacific migratory flyway. Next to it is the Central, and then followed by the Mississippi Flyway, which Ohio is part of it,
right.
And most of the Midwestern states are part of it. And then we have the Atlantic Flyway. So these are the four kind of highways the birds take north and south every year. So it first showed in the Pacific Flyway. A few weeks later, it showed in the Mississippi Flyway. So it started in Minnesota, Arkansas, Missouri, all at the same time. The sad news is, once it got into the Midwest, it exploded into the poultry industry.
Well, that's where we have a lot of our large-scale poultry these days.
Yep.
You talk from, you know, from frankly, from Minnesota clear down to Arkansas.
Yep.
Those are the turkey,
absolutely,
the turkey and chicken capitals.
Yep. Yeah. So once it got into poultry-heavy states, it exploded and. You know, yeah, maybe the wild birds brought it in first, but it was really up to the people to move it around and spread it. So that's what happened, and that's what we think happened during this year. The other piece of information that I wanted to pass here is that this virus still exists in the wild bird population.
Right.
We still find it out there. So coming the fall migration in a few days, a few weeks from now, there could be another wave of that outbreak. So that's what we're kind of preparing for here in Ohio and nationwide. USDA has been very busy preparing for that, hoping that this time the spread of the disease is going to be much less.
Now, at this point, we haven't had it identified here in Ohio, but
nope.
We have had cases of wild bird cases in Indiana and Michigan.
And Ontario, Canada, and
north,
Kentucky.
Yeah. Kentucky, that's one I was going to ask you because I couldn't remember if it had gotten there. But again, those were the wild birds. However, that's one of the ways it gets into the state. Tell me a little bit, Mo, and I lost track on this because, quite frankly, I didn't have enough fingers to count on. How many birds did we end up having to either loot that we either lost or had to slaughter because of this?
So that will lead me to the way we tried to control this disease,
right.
Which is we have only a few options with a disease that is that vicious, that is that aggressive, is what we call stamping out the disease. We don't want to have the disease here. So we try to control the disease, keep it contained, and we want this disease to die out in our population. In order to do that, we will have to quarantine the cases and draw a circle around it and surveillance and do, unfortunately, sometimes what we call depopulation. So
right.
We remove all the susceptible birds from the index farm and so on, trying to contain the infection. And the other way is to start vaccinating and giving our birds immunity. But that means that the virus is going to stay with us, because if the birds are immune to it, it's going to survive a little bit, not too much,
right.
But it's going to survive longer time. So the USA chose the stamping out choice, and that led us to depopulate a lot of birds in total in the United States. We had more than 200 cases of detection, and up more than 48 million birds were depopulated.
So more than 48 million birds had to be eliminated for that.
Yep.
Of course, there's all the different ways they do that. So is there a vaccine for this? Have we chosen to go that route?
So because influenza is such a variable virus,
right.
If each strain, each kind of those viruses will have their own vaccines. And that's what we're working on. USDA is working on one right now, specifically for this specific outbreak. We are doing what we call the stockpiling. So they're having a large stock of the vaccine. In case we needed to use it, we're going to be able to deploy it and use it immediately. But there is no permission to use the vaccine yet. So we might have the vaccine, but we will not be able to use it unless USDA says, yes, we can go ahead and use it.
And it would have to get pretty bad before they would go
yes.
there. Because as you said, once you start vaccinating, you're maintaining a low level. It's just like when we give human flu shots.
Yep.
We're giving
so
a low level of that.
When you start hearing that we're vaccinating birds against avian influenza, you guys know that we kind of throw the towel and gave up on eradicating the disease.
Okay, so we're still trying to eliminate it. Yep. I think one of the things that I deal with consumer markets and food on the food side, and one of the things I think a lot of people have had some problems understanding is why this hit, if you will, has had such a higher impact on egg prices than it has Absolutely. On, say, even turkey, which has been hit pretty hard, but
right.
but certainly a higher impact than on a broiler question. Market. So tell me a little bit, because you'd almost think these flu bugs were being...
selective.
Yes, it's like they've targeted somebody.
It's kind of like that.
Yeah.
So in the Midwest, we are the biggest turkey producers and the biggest layer producers. When it comes to chicken meat, it's the Southeast. Right. So Alabama, Georgia, Arkansas, this part of the country is the heaviest production part. And this part was not affected by the avian influenza. The Midwest, where most of the egg production is, was heavily affected. And also another factor that plays into this is the level of integration the industry has.
Right.
So we have such huge farms. In one of the farms, probably the biggest flock that has been affected in one facility, in one flock, they didn't have just 1 million birds or 2 million birds. They had 5.7 million birds in one facility. So imagine if the virus hit a facility like that and we had to get rid of 5 million birds, and that was not the only case. We had a couple of other cases where the facility had more than 5 million birds. So just to give you a kind of a gauge of the numbers that we're talking about, Iowa, the total layer population in Iowa, which is the largest layer producing state, is 60 million birds. During this outbreak, Iowa lost more than 30 million birds. So more than half of its population was lost due to this outbreak. And this is why we had a larger hit on egg prices than meat prices, because the meat was kind of hopefully still...
Yeah, they didn't have as much problem down there.
They didn't have much problems.
Yeah.
It hit the layer industry pretty hard.
Well, one of the areas that we haven't necessarily seen the reaction, it's there, but people get hit, are kind of hidden from it, is so a good chunk of that egg production was also a couple of the big facilities got hit were the major cracker facilities, the
right.
ones that crack egg to go into the processing market
yeah.
for ingredients.
Yeah, and so liquid eggs and
yeah.
the eggs that bakeries buy and,
right.
and
those,
so on. So.
Yeah, I've actually been surprised that we haven't seen some of those other products go up a little bit more than they have, but
yeah.
again, that's an indication of how small one ingredient is in the total price of, say, a cake
right.
or whatever
right.
it might be.
But hopefully we'll be able to repopulate this summer in Iowa, and hopefully the prices will be on their way down, and hopefully the virus will not hit again this year. We're kind of waiting still.
Well, that's the thing about chickens. We can get chicken production up pretty quickly.
We can do that.
That's the advantage over cows. Okay, so we've got this thing, at least for now, kind of under control. How come we didn't get too worried about the jump over to the human side of the game?
Right. Very good question. I think we can never rule it out. We can never say it's never going to happen.
Sure.
But from what we've seen with this particular virus, it did not make that jump. It didn't make it in Asia. It didn't make it in
Right.
Europe. And it didn't make it in the United States. So we feel that this is not the virus that's going to jump for human. We have good level of certainty about that. But again, as a scientist, we can't really say never. It's not 100%, but it's probably 99%.
Well, that monitoring Asia really has
yep.
been our guide, because if it's going to jump anywhere,
it's going to be in Asia.
Yeah, because yeah. The birds are more often backyard. They're spread out. The people are integrated with the birds
and
a lot more.
One big factor that makes Asia really interesting when it comes to the avian influenza is the duck population that they have.
Right.
So they have large ducks population, and they're practicing, they go out, graze, they bring
right.
it back, and the interaction between humans and ducks is such an interesting way back there, and that's probably part of the reason why they generate so many viruses.
Sure. Hey, I tell you what, Mo,
yeah.
by the way, I actually heard you say thank. I think that instead of think, you said thank. I think that Georgia influence is coming over on you there a little bit. Okay, Mo worked in Georgia a bit before he came up here to Ohio. Let's see if we have some questions for him.
For you all.
For y'all. Now, they try to tell me not to talk in my normal hillbilly tone when I'm out here, so let's...
I'm not going to be able to.
I'm going to have to get Mo talking real good like.
All right.
Questions for Mo El-Ghazar. Yes, Chris, please come to the microphone. I'll even turn it on.
So this year in Ohio, the fair projects were canceled. You know, there was a ban on taking poultry to the fair. Do you have any comment on the future of that?
Absolutely. The thinking behind that was we want to protect everybody. And if you imagine a fair situation where people will bring in birds from everywhere into the same position and then take those birds back to their, you know, different many locations. So if we happen to have one bird that's infected with this virus, it's going to spread it locally in the fair and give it to everybody else, and then we will have people going back to their locations, spreading the virus even further. So this scenario is a disaster scenario for spreading the virus. And what we thought is we want to protect everybody. We want to protect the backyard population. We want to protect the non-commercial population, and we want to protect the commercial population as well. And in order to do that, we or the state veterinarian thought a ban on poultry gathering, I think that's the language they used, was in place in order to avoid having such a quick spread of the virus in case the virus was found in Ohio.
I think part of what Chris is also asking is that kind of a ban going to go away? What's it going to take to get that also that we could show birds next year or whatever?
I'm not the decision maker on this, but I think I'm close to the circles of decision making, and the thinking behind it is we are still fearful of a fall outbreak, and if we waited through the fall and the outbreak didn't hit, hopefully by the next spring, there might be some.
It depends on what it does.
Yeah, it depends on what's happening.
And I think, you know, unfortunately, like I said, I pick on the people I know, but I know Chris knows how that is played. It's logical. I mean, and this is one case where maybe regulation follows logic, Chris. There you go. Got another question here, sir.
So you talked about the important work that the USDA and state veterinarians are doing on the domestic side, but that the main route of transmission is through waterfowl. And so I wonder if you could talk about the federal efforts that are being directed at waterfowl, wild birds, to kind of help the...
Yes, sure. There's not a whole lot that we can do about wild birds. They do their thing, and these populations are huge. I mean, we don't really have the manpower or the logistics to control their movements or their locales. So they will do whatever they want to do. What we are trying to do here is to sample, so do surveillance, to understand if the virus is still in the population or not. Is the risk of the virus coming back is a real risk or not? And also, we're trying to educate poultry growers on the commercial side and on the backyard side on how to avoid contact with with migratory waterfowl. So how to repel them, how to keep your birds away from them, how to improve your biosecurity, how to do all that stuff, and hopefully minimizing the risk of the transmission of the virus from the wild birds to our domestic poultry.
I mean, that's really the only thing you do. We're not right in the middle of the flyway.
No, we're not right in the middle of it. Which is part of it.
Yeah, I mean that helps, but it also makes monitoring a little harder.
Yep.
If you're right in the middle, I actually worked right in the middle of one of those flyways, and you will see an entire section out west where they rate fields by sections, an entire section where the field crawls because they're that many hundreds of thousands of ducks on that field.
And so, there are many, many different species, and they have different behaviors, and they fly in different ways. And
so if we can at least know when they're in the area, then it's up, really, it becomes up to the producer.
Yeah.
And that, and that's also part of the reason why in Asia that it becomes even more of a challenge, because so many of the producers are backyard-type producers.
Yep. Smaller so the scale level producers. Of integration in other countries is not as high as in the United States, and that makes disease control a lot more harder. So did I answer your question?
Got another one coming. Hey, Mo, you win the prize for most questions today so far.
Good afternoon. I'm from New York area, Hudson River Flyway.
Yeah. Okay.
And how much concern, if these are considered the carriers of this thing, like the buffalo is the brucellosis carrier and can function normally with it, how much concern should there be in the feces? Up our way, the playgrounds, the schools, the parks, the parking lot.
Like, that's a great question.
Green mass. And
so
I've been in Greeley.
Okay.
And Greeley in the morning is geese from this side to this side, wave after wave after wave.
Yeah.
And they settle in the fields, and they leave, a goose will leave behind feces.
Right. Okay.
Will this virus stay in this feces for a while and get in our grain?
Great question. And the answer, the short answer to your question is yes. Feces will be a great source of this virus. But you only need to worry about that if you have contact with poultry. So if you have a backyard flock or you work with poultry production, if you don't, this is not a human health risk yet. So it is good to avoid those feces, but there is not a risk for humans getting infected. It is only if you have contact with poultry. Absolutely, you need to avoid them and get your birds to avoid them. So if you have a pond in your backyard and the wild birds are gathering over there, don't bring your poultry out. So
I mean, there are other human health risks because you could slip and fall in that. And it would. And yep. I think from the look on his face, I think maybe he has. So, Yep.
Probably statewide or citywide response is not going to be the best thing,
Matt,
for this. Local individual response, if you own your backyard flock, be careful and take all the precautions in order to avoid that. So that's all I can say for that.
All right. Mo, we probably have some more questions, but you're going to be hanging around a bit, right?
Sure, I'll be around.
Are you going to, unfortunately, I've been infected.
Oh, no.
So now you're probably going to get infected too, but
okay.
Mo will be over in the veterinary medicine tent.
Sure. One last thing I want to say. The best line of defense we have against this thing is biosecurity and trying to keep it out of our birds. And understanding where is it coming from and where the risk of infection is the best line of defense we have. The last thing I want to say, if you started seeing alarming level of mortalities in your birds, speak to someone. Call the Ohio Department of Agriculture, call the OSU Extension, call the Ohio Poultry Association, call someone in order to get some help. Because this thing is pretty serious.
Well, we've known in some other situations where people thought, I'm not going to call because they're going to come in and they're going to quarantine me or wipe me out. Frankly, you're doing your operation as well as the other operations
yes.
a whole lot of harm by yes. doing it that way, and it's not going to get better without help
no,
anyway.
No, if it stayed here, it's going to be bad for everybody.
No, I'm glad you brought that up because that this is one of those things. Well, it's like any other livestock disease. It's highly contagious. If it gets in your operation, you've got a huge problem. You can help control it for yourself and for everybody else. So we want them to do that. All right. We didn't go and talk at all about like backyard flocks and monitoring them, but we're just that's a whole nother
yep.
discussion.
Sure.
Maybe we'll have that some other time. Mo El Ghazar from the College of Veterinary Medicine. You done good.
All right.
All right.
Well, thank you everybody for,
thanks,
for listening.
Mo.
Thanks.
All right, we're gonna take just a brief break, long enough basically for me to get Matt and Kareen up here and get rid of whatever that flying thing was that wanted to bite me. Anyway, we'll take a brief break and then we'll talk a bit about grain prices and so what's going on in those markets.